Hi, I'm Sharad Kutin, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Yesterday, the Parliament tabled the budget 2019. Of course, it's a story told with a lot of numbers. There are, of course, issues around it, narratives, ways of seeing the world, analysis of our problem. And to help me out, to help all of us out, I have, in fact, the great honour of welcoming Yang Berhormat Lim Guan Eng, the Minister of Finance. He is in the House. Thank you so much for joining us. It is
that.
A story told with a lot of numbers, but tonight I hope you can help us to peel away the numbers and get to the hub of the matter, right? Let's talk about the budget. It is a one-year horizon for financing government, but I understand that your government is thinking for the long term. How do we understand this 1 year in terms of the long game?
Well, I think this budget is perhaps attracts attention because it's seen as the way forward. That is a precursor to the roadmap of how Malaysia is able to get up from this self-inflicted fiscal wound as a result of one NDB and a myriad of other scandals. So we have outlined that we feel that we'll need at least 3 years. Hopefully in 3 years we can recover our fiscal health. And that's why when you look at our fiscal deficit, like this year you'll be at 3.7, next year will be at 3.4, and then in 2020 will be at 3%. 2021, we hope to bring it up way down, below 3%.
Okay, what do these numbers mean for the man in the street? How does it actually affect the Malaysian who's struggling to make a living, or a Malaysian who aspires for greater things, whether personally or for their children?
Well, the fiscal deficit is important in a sense because it is the way the world sees Malaysia. And if that the impression is positive, of course, then we get higher ratings. And higher ratings is important because you look at the interest rate. That's how interest rates are determined.
Right, so we are
Higher ratings means low interest rates.
Right, so we're disciplined as a nation fiscally, that plays well into our image. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, what about the terms of the, as it were, the legacy? You inherited a government run by the Barisan Nasional for 60 years. Of course, much was made about Najib Razak's administration and some of its follies. But what about the general idea of how they did accounting, for instance? Were there and practices that were just not up to scratch in terms of 21st century governance?
It's just not a question of the accounting being not up to scratch. It was just sheer creative accounting. You know, I've said earlier there were false accounts, there were hidden files, and there were red files where access was only limited to one or two persons. And we want to put that all behind, Sharad. That's why we talk about moving in or passing the Fiscal Responsibility Act, also the Government Procurement Act, so that we can ensure that there is no more billion-dollar whales. We do not want to have any more billion-dollar whales. And on top of that, we have also set up a debt management office so that we can keep track of all our debts and liabilities. And then not just to make sure that it's not excessive, but at the same time, do that necessary coordination so that we can get the best rates. For instance, let's say if there's a need to borrow funds from various agencies, let everyone know what the left hand is doing so that the right hand can match it together so that you can get the best yield. Right. So I think all these institutional reforms will help to make Malaysia more transparent and more competent, and also engender confidence amongst investors. And Sharad, confidence is everything. Now when you talk about running an economy, just as you run a business, it's all about confidence. When people have confidence in you, they will invest in you. When people have confidence in you, they will buy your products. And when people are confident in you, you will have a bright future, and that has implications for people, how they see the country.
Right. But domestically, right, what is, and I understand there is a trust deficit generally with politicians from either side of the aisle, because there's a lot of political capital for Pakatan Harapan now, but how do you address that question? People say, yes, it's a great budget, but will the money actually be spent in the way that it's intended to be? How do you reassure Malaysians about that?
Now, when you talk about trust deficit, the only way that you can generate or turn that around to your trust surplus is through performance. You must deliver. Now, for us, we feel that if you just rely on government for delivery, that will not work. You must have a new mindset. You must maybe even a paradigm shift. And that's why I said in that budget, which probably I didn't have time to explain, that the government, the business of government should not be in business. Yet, we are open for business. So what does that mean? You say you're open for business, but yet you do not want to be in business. Now, when we are open for business is that we want the private sector to come in as a stakeholder and that we will not do what they are doing. We will not duplicate their efforts. We will not interfere in their efforts. So if we do any initiative, we are willing to put in the seed money. We are still willing to do our core functions of regulation as well as monitoring. But we want the private sector to run it for us. At the same time, they must take responsibility that if there are profits, they will be able to benefit. But if there are losses, they will have to bear it. So this will save money for the government. At the same time, I'm sure we'll get a better outcome, or as you have said, a bigger bang for the buck.
Okay. There is a big issue around, government owned companies. There's the JLICs as well. They have a huge stake in the economy. Is there a long-term plan to wind that down or constrain it? Is that, I know it's not under your ministry, but as a government as a whole, is that something that you look forward to?
No, I think our approach would be to see how we can make it more efficient, how we can make it more productive, how we can turn it around. If that's not possible, then of course, then we got to consider other options. But I think we want to give every agency the opportunity to turn it around. And at the same time, Sharad, if you talk about divestment, that it doesn't, it is meaningless to talk about divestment when you're doing a fire sale. Why sell when the company is in trouble or it is at its lowest point? If you can turn it around, then sell it. I think you get a better price.
Okay. We'll come back to look at the question of revenue in a short while. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. We're talking about Budget 2019. My guest tonight, Yang Berhormat Lim Guan Eng, Minister of Finance, of course, well known to all of you. You gave a rousing speech yesterday in Parliament. It was a very long one, and I guess a lot of Malaysians tuning in, tuning out, have to deal with some of the numbers that you have. But I want to ask you, very pointed question, do you regret zero rating the GST in the run-up to the SST? It meant a shortfall for your government in delivering the kind of social provisions you want to. Do you have any regrets?
No, I think that was one fundamental promise that we made and it had to be delivered. Of course, it imposed almost unbearable strain. Because bear in mind, Sharad, we were only left with 450 million ringgit when we took over. So with the tax holiday, that means less revenue coming in. So it was a very tense few months to make sure that we are able to meet our operating expenses, especially the 8 billion ringgit monthly bill for salaries and pensions. We managed it.
You, as Chief Minister of Penang, two terms, did that experience help you deal with the onerous task of putting together this budget and kind of keeping the fiscal state of this of the government healthy?
Well, it did. But at the same time, you are looking at new areas. So you still have to make sure that that you are able to master the steep learning curve required. But the 10 years experience has the Penang Chief Minister helped. Helped in the sense that we had tried out several policies and we know which one would be most successful, which one less so. So we are able to pick the best ones and try out at a national stage and see whether it works.
Okay, you know, people always want something from government, right? They want the government to spend on them and what they concerned. But they don't talk about as much about revenue. Where is the government going to get the money to give out? Let's talk about revenue. What is the long-term plan for the government in terms of revenue? Is it growing the pie, or is it just slicing the pie differently?
No, I think it's both. Both growing the pie, and then secondly, to get the best outcome. In other words, to get a bigger bang for a buck. People talk about us cutting fat, but cutting fat doesn't mean reducing our expenditure. Cutting fat means that we make ourselves leaner, but we are still the same size. Like, you know, you yourself, I'm amazed at how you're able to maintain your shape.
But I know, we've met 20 years ago, and
still,
I was a much slimmer person.
No, but still filled with muscle.
Right.
So I think that's very important. So let's say, for example, our budget is 300 billion. You cut out the fat, but you maintain the budget to make sure it's leaner. So what you're getting is bigger bang for the buck, better outcomes. At the same time, you need to grow the pie. Because the population is expanding. And with a bigger pie, you're able to do much more policies.
There was a fear, and I think you, in the early days, you kind of warned people, the public, not to expect too much in this budget. Very recently, you did, just before your budget speech, you did say, no austerity. Now, that seemed, I think it was a huge sigh of relief that wasn't an austerity budget. The thinking behind it, what change in the management of expectations for the Malaysian public for this budget?
No, okay, let me look at this glass. It is half full. If you look at it, austerity, in terms of austerity, you see it as half empty. But if you look at it in terms of cost cutting, so that you can make yourself leaner, as he said just now, I think that is what we are referring to, fiscal consolidation.
Okay, but you also, and there was expectation maybe of new taxes. We did see some new taxes. There was soda on digital services, at least from the consumer end. And bicycles, I believe. Bicycles. Some import duties on bicycles, I think, went up.
No, they were reduced, not went up.
Oh, they were reduced.
Yes, because we wanted to encourage the Tour di Langkawi, and then we felt that this would generate more interest in bicycles and a healthy lifestyle.
Okay, so
that's why we reduced the...
The bicycles?
Yes,
but you imposed taxes on soda.
You
and
had
other
a soda tax, yes.
But what about digital services? Are people were complaining, saying, well, I'm going to have to pay taxes on my Netflix, my Spotify, in those kinds of consumables?
No, but we wanted to encourage the local industry. So if you can get, of course, these foreign operators to come in, incorporate locally, they will also help to get local participation, as well as, of course, that necessary skills transfer. So you have to look after the local industry, because if you continue to be dominated by foreign players, so when are you going to grow local players to be part of the fourth industrial revolution? Industry 4.0 will be everything for our future. So you have to prepare the young for the future, just as we have to prepare the future for the young. So we are doing that by investing and giving incentives and ensuring a level playing field. But at the same time, you also have to prepare the young. And to do that, we are focusing on education. And that's why we have, of course, allocated the largest amount of budget, which is more than 60 billion ringgit, Sharad, for education.
Right. And we'll come back to the education story in a minute. I do want to ask you about taxes and revenues. What is it for you in the long term? I believe the price of crude is very important in calculating what can be spent. But is that the main focus, the main foundation for this budget, the price of crude?
Well, you know, the price of oil would be a boon in good times, but it can be a bane in bad times. What we want to see is a diversified economy. Yes, if the price of oil is in our favour, it is a bonus. But if the price of oil is not doing so well, it doesn't really matter if you've got a diversified economy. So we do not want to be reliant on only one commodity. What we want to see is a diversified economy. We want to be part of the new economy, which means not just focusing on the manufacturing sector, but also on the services sector, and also in the digital economy, where you are looking at computing technologies, and most important of all, data. It used to be said that cash is king. Cash is no more king in Malaysia. Data is king. So you must be able to master the technologies related to data. I mean, it is straightforward. What is the largest hotel company in the world? What is the largest taxi company in the world? And these companies don't own a single hotel, nor do they own a single taxi. But their success is all based on data, and data creates wealth.
Okay. The final thoughts on the question of revenue. Moving forward, any chance that you might bring back the GST, is that something, because that's the global conversation, GST is the kind of now global standard for revenue generation, is that something that possible?
Well, some would say that's a gold standard for taxes, as a consumer tax, Sharad. But we have made a political stand, and for us to go backwards is, I think, untenable. So we will not bring back the GST. We'll stick with the SST, and we will look at more productive ways to raise revenue. And of course, we hope that through our investments, through the new approach towards generating new business, especially in terms of institutional reforms, open tenders, getting more stakeholders to be our collaborators, and finally, trying to establish Malaysia as an entrepreneurial state, where we are focused on creativity and innovation. I think that is our future.
Okay, we'll come back to the future shortly. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me in the room, Lim Guan Eng, Minister of Finance, and the man who set out the budget tabled yesterday in Parliament. Was this a B40 budget?
Well, of course, many would see this as a B40 budget in the sense that, you know, many of the policies are directed towards assisting the poorer section of society. And I think that is, of course, definitely a responsibility of the government. But that doesn't mean that the other sectors are ignored. You look at the funds that we have given out to companies, to SMEs, and SMEs even got a tax reduction from 18% to 17%. Those who buy houses, not necessarily in the B40 group, they have a waiver of stamp duty up to 30th of June. They have easier lending options, as outlined by Bank Negara. So whilst the focus is on B40, we are also trying to take care of the other sections, especially the corporate community.
Okay, before we go to the middle class and what the middle class has got, there is an issue here around the political nature of kind of giving things to the B40. I mean, is this just the necessity of the day to make sure that the B40 is the most, that is at least satisfied, because it potentially could be a source of opposition to the government of the day?
Well, that is, of course, one aspect. But I think a more important aspect would be that we need to uplift the poorer sections so that they can move upwards. Because if you do not give them the opportunity to move outwards, then what hope are you talking about? You cannot just ignore the bottom 40%. They are important part of the population.
Right.
And if they can move up, this will also generate more income, more revenue, and grow the economy.
Right, and I believe that social inclusion is a large part of the Pakatan Harapan manifesto. I just want to know that, from an administrative point of view, how do you determine an individual coming from the B40? Is it going to take a lot of costs and time to actually figure out who's from the B40 and track that so that, you know, people who are getting the privileges of the B40 are not people who have actually now moved up, as it were?
No, it's all about income levels. So I think we are looking at it basically from an aspect of income levels. When you talk about social inclusion, it's just not about income levels. There are also other aspects related to social inclusion. But if you do not help them or uplift them economy, don't talk about social inclusion. That is always the fundamental cause of social exclusion. Now, but having said that, I would like to stress again, Sharad, we are not ignoring other segments of society.
So what did the middle classes get then in this budget?
For example, when you look at the fleet card, our proposal to have a fleet card, we are talking about cars up to 1,500cc, and that's, of course, the initial suggestion. We were supposed to only limit it to B40, but we felt that probably that pool is too small. So we said that why don't we look at it and see how we can ensure that not just the B40 benefit, but also segments of the N40 benefit. So when we did not specify that it's restricted to B40, of course then others say, oh, does that mean luxury cars such as Audis, the Mercedes, apparently they have even a 1.5 series, they can also benefit from these targeted fuel subsidies? No. The answer is no. Okay, as far as luxury cars are concerned, they will not be...
Okay, so we're not particularly sympathetic to the 1%, as it were. There is an issue of houses there was no tax before. If you, after 5 years and you sold your place, you wouldn't get taxed. Now you will be taxed. Now, for many aspiring middle class, mid-career, they do want to upgrade. Do you think this will hurt them? Or do you think they will resent the government for actually imposing a tax post 5 years?
Well... you know, Sharad, this is something that we actually argued over a period of time. But when you talk about getting more revenue, the other options are what? Increase corporate tax? I don't think that works.
And why not?
An inheritance tax? Because you must look at the global trend. Global trend is towards reducing corporate taxes. Global trend is towards reducing income taxes. Global trend is directed towards making the whole environment less costly for business. So I think when you, and of course the global trend is not to have inheritance tax. So that was one option that we considered before we decided not to proceed with it. But when you talk about the global trend, there is of course capital gains tax. So if we do not impose capital gains tax, which we have not done so, one option, of course, will be to extend the RPGT. And, of course, some may not agree that we have fixed it at the minimum level of 5%. I think if you have profits, and that's only for properties which is above 200,000, if you make a gain, I hope that you can understand that why the government wants you to make a contribution.
Do you 45%. Well, you're a politician. You have to speak to ordinary people all the time, right? Folks from the B40, middle-class folks. Do you think they resent giving money to government?
Well, as long as you prove that you do not steal their money and it's used for good use, I believe that they can understand. They want to see the country prosper. They want to see that the money that they contribute in the form of taxes is used to build better infrastructure, to make the country more prepared for the future, and to see that their children can enjoy equal opportunities. I think as long as this government can show, and I'm sure that they believe that is the case, where do not steal the money, I'm sure they'll be more willing to pay their taxes more readily.
Okay. We'll come back with a look at the education sector. They got a whopping 60 billion ringgit. What are they going to do with it? Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Lim Guan Eng, Minister of Finance. He's trying to persuade me that this government budget is a sensible one. And I'm quite persuaded. I am, though, I'm very suspicious about numbers. Big numbers scare me, Guan Eng. You know, what we have, and for the education sector, a huge number. But we've not had small numbers for education in the past. We've had big numbers, too. A lot of money spent, But are we just throwing money at the problem? Have we had any impact? Has the money had any impact?
No, I would agree with you that perhaps the results are not what we desire, far from what we have hoped for. But I think my colleague, Dr. Masli, he's got some ideas that he's trying to see whether it works, to get better outcomes. And as you said, just some better, a bigger bang for a buck.
And so perhaps, why do the government collectively, I believe it's the whole cabinet comes together and decides on the budget, not just yourself, why was the focus on the education sector? Why did you think of it as so important to fund it to the tune of 60 billion?
No, number one, everyone agrees that the way forward for the country is, of course, to have the best education system possible. And we know that they have not measured up. They have not fulfilled the expectations of not just the cabinet, but the people of Malaysia. And secondly, the education sector is huge. You look at the number of teachers, at the number of schools, and the universities that is financed by the public sector. You just cannot abandon it. You have to make it better. Tweak it, fine-tune it, but you cannot just abandon it. So when we...
When you say abandon, mean just divest from that sector?
No, just wash your hands off it. So if you do not invest, continue to invest in education, what are the alternatives? Because once you abandon it, that means what can the children hope for? So you must continue to try to fine-tune it. And of course, for me, one possible approach is to ask the private sector to come in. Because the private sectors have very definite ideas about education. They will be focusing on education that can be applicable in the marketplace, that would help to grow the market economy.
But are we a pragmatic people? We're given to sentimentality. The nationalist discourse is very strong. Is your government willing to be pragmatic when it comes to education, when it comes to, say, language? Our fear of, allowing English to come in a much more holistic way. All those signs, at least in the past, that we weren't allowing ourselves to be pragmatic when it comes to education and education policy.
No, I think what we want to see is that we of course promote our national language, but we want our people to be also fluent and well versed in English, because whether we like it or not, English is a universal language, and if you lose your advantage in English, you will lose out competitively. So when you talk about our education system, you put in so much money, you expect better results, you expect the standard of English to improve. But that is not the case. So there it is where, when you look at the problems faced by the education sector, you cannot abandon it. You must try alternatives. And one, of course, a possible approach is to get private sector participation, because they know what to do. For instance, I mean, Sharad, I've tried out this concept of vocational education, bringing in vocational education from Germany. You know, in Malaysia, vocational education has a bad name. Those who don't really quite make it are seen to be are either in the vocational education sector, and those who come from there somehow do not measure up. So we feel that more can be done.
Right. So you gave some allocations to TVET,
TVET, and also I think there should be collaboration with success stories, the German model, where you teach and learn at the same time. And they teach you in the factories, and they expect you to work so that you can apply your knowledge immediately. So vocational education should not be seen, rightly or wrongly, as a place where when they can't get any place, they go to the vocational schools. And that's not fair to the vocational students, because I've seen some good students from vocational schools, but the whole image is not a positive one. Right. So when we are talking about improving vocational schools, it is very important, because these are our future managers. So if we can get private sector participation, they will tell you what they need, and then they can also suggest what are the topics that you can teach, and also the subject matter. I think that's important. I
mean, one of the things that really impressed me during your speech was the desire to have more accountants. And I thought, you know, you were going to work with a professional body to have more Bumiputra accountants. Why did accounting as a skill become something to focus on in your budget?
No, there are two reasons. Number one, because I think we need honest accountants. Not the creative type. We need honest accountants who are good in their jobs, but who are willing to make sure that when they sign on that financial report, that it is a true and fair view. It is indeed true and fair. Number two, why accountants and not other professions? Because we have an accounting body or an accounting group that is undertaking this effort to train more Bumiputra accountants. And we felt that since they have produced results, why not support them?
So they're supporting a success story?
Yes.
Other success stories,
we are willing to consider and we are willing to adopt if they can show they can produce results. So we want, I think, to invest in success stories. Because when you have a track record, then I think we feel more secure that we can get the biggest bang for our buck.
This is going to be the expression of the night, the biggest bang for your buck. We do have to look, though, at the headwinds that are going to be facing the Malaysian economy and how your government is going to deal with that. So stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan. Lim Guan Eng, Minister of Finance, a man who tabled Budget 2019, is with me tonight to help us understand some of the challenges for the government going forward. It is, for all accounts, a reasonable budget. I think many critics, you can hear the debate going on at this point in time. But what are the headwinds? Is this the template going forward? What would change it for you and what would change drastically? We live in a very volatile international environment.
Well, it is very challenging in the sense that it is outside of control. And if the trade war escalates, which I think many have predicted that it would escalate, then I think we've got to take remedial measures to ensure that we can continue to enjoy sustainable growth. You know, Sharad, when we consider the various scenarios and the various options, the government finally decided that we must prioritise the economic well-being of the people. To ensure the economic well-being of the people means that you must guarantee or you must try to achieve at least around 4.8, 4.9, 5% economic growth. And to do that, we must do a little bit of pump priming where possible. And that, of course, is the reason why we are looking at 3 years. Of reducing our fiscal deficit to below 3%.
But you're taking 3%. Time. You're not rushing on this score.
No, one of the reasons why we are not rushing on the score is we want to ensure nearly 5% economic growth. And you cannot do that if you start cutting too much. So the fiscal deficit numbers may look good, but at the end of the day, if you prioritise economic well-being, you must ensure sustainable growth at nearly 5%. So that's why when we look at economic headwinds, we feel that we cannot risk it. That the stakes are too high. If we prioritise economic well-being, we don't want the lower B40 group people to suffer. We do not want our companies to suffer. We want our companies to be able to grow. Then you must ensure economic growth around nearly 5%.
So you think you found the sweet spot between fiscal discipline and also pump priming expansionary budget?
Yes, but it may take a bit more time, 3 years. And as I said just now, whilst we are doing cost cutting, we must not cut our muscle. Just cut away the fat, add on muscle so you become leaner. At the same time, you must also invest in productive new economies. Because if Malaysia wants to escape the middle income trap, you must grow.
And for that, we also need higher education or better
Definitely.
Education.
Better education. Not just at the university level, but also at the vocational level. You know, look at Germany. Its success is due to their ability to give the best vocational training in the world.
Now, coming back to non-domestic factors, right? We talked about the trade war between the US and China. Some people are saying that actually Malaysia might reap some benefits from this trade war. How does the cabinet think about that? I mean, what exactly could the possible benefits be for Malaysia while these two giants battle it out?
No, we want to project Malaysia as a safe haven. To offer Malaysia as a location of choice for investors, not trapped between these two economic giants. So Malaysia is a safe haven. We want to attract investors, not just in manufacturing, but also in the services sector. But to do that, you must make Malaysia attractive. So I think 2 days ago, when the World Bank published the Ease of Doing Business Competitiveness Report, we jumped up from number 24 to number 15. Now, this is something positive. Now, we intend to maintain, and if not possible, and if possible, improve on it.
Right, but that would be perhaps a credit to the previous administration.
Well, that was over I mean, it was during, part of it was during their time, but their part was also during our time.
Okay. I do want to talk about China, though. There was a lot of China bashing in the run-up to the last general elections, fear of Chinese investments, types of Chinese investments. Has the conversation settled? What exactly is the government's thinking on China now?
No, I think we have always valued our relationship and our trade ties with China. They are our largest trading partner. There's no reason for us to offend our largest trading partner. You know, the customer is always right. But when things go wrong, I think we got to uphold, you know, our national interests, ensure that the rule of law is respected, and make sure that at the end of the day, Malaysia doesn't lose out. Now, to do that, I think we must, of course, ensure or be brave to take action when necessary. And at the same time, communicate to the other side, whether it's China or US, that we are not being country-specific, but we are being company-specific. You know, for instance, when we take action against Goldman Sachs, we're going to sue them for the fees and everything else. It doesn't mean that we're anti-US. Similarly, when you take action against a Chinese company, we are not anti-China.
But is that how they see it?
So we need to communicate with the Chinese government. And using the US analogy, we are country-specific, trying to look after our interests. I mean, for instance, one of these contracts involves making payments even though no work has been done on the work site.
I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it?
That's outrageous. Now, would this country accept it in their own country? No. They wouldn't accept it in their country. Why would they do the same in a foreign country where they have excellent relations? They understand. And I think it's our duty to communicate to them, and I'm sure they would be willing to help us out because they want to see a prosperous partner, a prosperous neighbour and a prosperous ally.
Okay.
So we believe that that they know that this is good for everyone.
Okay. In the remaining time that we have, I mean, there are some other elephants in the room. I was very impressed by, you know, this promotion of national parks. But you say the federal government has to work with state governments in order to achieve those ends. There's also the question of federalism. Sabah and Sarawak also pulling in very different directions. What do you see in your budget that address those aspirations? It's sometimes quite different from the aspirations coming from the peninsula.
Well, I think we got to make sure everybody understands that we must pull together. That only when we come together can we make this nation prosperous.
But there's a lot of distrust, isn't there?
No, that's why in order to remove that trust deficit and turn it around into a trust surplus, you must deliver. And the only way you can deliver is to improve the economic well-being and economic conditions for the people. As I said just now, at the end of the day, what really matters for the people in changing the government will be this. Number one, whether you have better jobs, whether you have better pay, whether you have more money to spend.
Not all of those can be determined by the government of the day. Do you think that if the economy goes sour, or there are problems with it and there are challenges, or it takes a longer time to achieve those goals, that you will be blamed for it, that your government will be blamed for it? Are people impatient, do you think?
People are naturally impatient. And when things go wrong, even as though it's not your fault, you will be blamed, Sharad. And I expect to be blamed. And I've said before that I'm ready to be the most unpopular finance minister because hard decisions have to be made. But if you want Malaysia to escape the middle income trap, Malaysia to be a developed high income nation, I think someone has to take a stand. And if that person has to be me, so be it.
But you represent the entire cabinet and all its members, right? It's a collective decision, is it not?
No, I don't think I represent the entire cabinet. The Prime Minister is the leader of the cabinet. So, of course, any suggestions I make, it has to be approved by cabinet, but I'm the one that is the silver lightning rod. I have to ensure its execution. And when things go wrong, they must find someone to blame. And I think naturally it will be me. But I'm willing to take up the challenge if we can dig ourselves out of this hole, self-dug hole or self-inflicted wound, so that we can give a decent shot to our children. For too long, we have been cheated. For too long, we have been deceived. Your future, my future, was stolen by the previous government. We must make sure that the future of our children is not stolen.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Yang Berhormat Lim Guan Eng, Minister of Finance, man who tabled the budget 2019, something that's going to be determining the shape of government for the next year. Stay tuned. I'm Sharad Kutin, and this has been a Let's Talk, only on Astro Wani.
Thank you, Sharad.
Thank you. Thank you so much.